Hey there, I'm Marjorie Stiegler, and you're listening to the Career Prescription Podcast, where we tackle the important things they don't teach you in medical school, like how to treat your career like the business it really is, with strategies to accelerate the kind of success that you want. Because you deserve a career you love and a career that loves you back. Are you ready? Let's get into it. Well, today I'm so thrilled to welcome to the show Dr. Debbie Bradley, who is a medical oncologist as well as an executive coach, among many, many other things. And she is here to talk with us, right, with me and with you, my listeners, about all the things wrapped up in what it means to leave clinical medicine. I think this is such a sort of loaded question that means so many different and deep things to so many different people. So, Debbie, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me today.
I'm so delighted that you're here. I think before we dive in and talk about, you know, what it means to leave, and I'm glad that you even kind of brought this across the radar when I was really asking out loud, you know, to people, what should I put on the show next? You know, I've crossed 100 episodes. Maybe I'm running out of creativity. What do people want to talk about? And you suggested this topic, and I thought it was just, it's so simple, but really, really profound. Before we delve into it, would you take a minute or two to tell my audience a little bit about you?
Absolutely. So I am a board certified medical oncologist. I graduated from med school just over 20 years ago, went straight through residency, fellowship, actually started my career. I'm very academic, subspecialized genitourinary oncologist. And as I grew, I began mountain biking and actually racing mountain bikes, transitioned into private practice in more of a rural setting, which I felt wasn't a perfect fit for me. And now I'm somewhere in between. And more recently have made the very hard but very exciting decision to transition out of clinical medicine. And it's been a very interesting but fun experience as I'm talking to just a lot of my peers and, you know, seeing people on different social media platforms, I've learned just how much thought is given to this. And so that's why I decided to share my story.
Thank you so much. That's remarkable. You and I think are roughly parallel, I think in our timelines, and having done academic medicine sort of first and for a good bit. I did that myself for a little bit over a decade. And now I have been in pharma for a good number of years. And I know that's something that you had also mentioned. Is that where you work today? Or is that just something you had thought about? Or
yeah, that's where I'm heading. So I actually begin, I'm moving into pharma middle of October. So I am working out my 90 days. So yeah, I'm right in that transition right now.
Oh, that's super exciting. Then I think not only through obviously the deep thought you've put into this and talking to many of our colleagues and friends and your experience as a coach, but probably what you're living a little bit right now in terms of some of the things that maybe people think about when they use the phrase, you know, that I'm going to leave medicine, which so just so interesting. It sounds very final and very definitive in some way, right? And yet many people that I know who stop practicing clinically still work in their capacity as physicians. So I don't know if we've left anywhere, but when you and I were chatting about this episode and thinking about, you know, what is sort of steeped up in what it means to leave, we mentioned a couple of little things that maybe we can dive into. We're talking about, you know, what it means for your identity when you switch and do something different. And if there is an internal process you go through when you sort of realign your professional identity or your professional activity, and also what other people may think, as well as both the fear and excitement of new possibilities. So those are some of the notes I have jotted down. Why don't we just take each one in turn and, you know, tell me a little bit about what it means to you or to people that you've coached or spoken to in terms of your identity and maybe a little bit of grieving or realigning when that changes.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it. So I'm going to tackle the identity first. You know, okay. me as well as many people I talked to, you know, being a physician was really your dream. And, you know, you worked super hard to get there. You know, you climb this huge mountain and you're there and you're doing it. And then for one reason or another, I think everyone's story or everyone's why is a little bit different. You know, you think about, do I want to do something different? And you have been doing medicine for so long, and we identify as a physician. And when we identify as a physician in clinical medicine, I think that very much means to us that we come in and we take care of patients and we put patients first. And so for me and several other people that I've talked to, when you think about doing something that's not direct patient care, it's really what is like, what am I, you know, what am I doing? And I think the other important factor in this is before you're truly in that transition, or even when you're thinking about it, I think the possibilities are just not even tangible. Mm-hmm. I've heard so many times, and myself, I've joked about it. I distinctly remember having a conversation probably just over a year ago with a colleague, and we were having one of those cynical days. You know, we weren't having a great day. And, you know, as you know, medicine can be tough. And we were just kind of joking around, like, what else can we do? And, you know, I used to be a competitive figure skater, and I was like, well, I guess I could teach competitive figure skating. And, you know, the colleague I was talking to was like, I teach basketball, you know, I could do that. And I think that just illustrates that when we are clinicians, that we often don't realize that we have this amazing skill set, and there's several other things we can do if we choose and if it's right for us. So absolutely. I think that's, yeah, with the identity thing, I think it's just huge of just realizing, yes, you have a skill set and there's many other things you can do as a physician.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's actually maybe even two things, right? I mean, one is how deeply we do identify as physicians and sort of hold a mental model that that means clinical medicine. For a lot of people, that's sort of one and the same. But also, I think we really we've amassed the skill set that we don't even know we've had, because we aren't learning those different skills, you know, by their names or separately. It's just part of the work that we just sort of lump in together as being a good clinical physician. And then people do sit, they sit there and they say to each other, I don't know how to do anything else, without realizing the vastness of what they do. And they'll undersell it, right? Like, all I do is see patients, like, as if that's right. A little thing.
Right. And we become very comfortable, right? We have this amazing muscle memory and neuropathways that, you know, you feel like even though patients are complicated and it's life and death, that you could do it in your sleep. And so it becomes something that you're very comfortable at. And we don't remember when we were med students and we had to actually take a history and physical and write a SOAP note of like how we had our cheats and things like that. And so I think that's another aspect of it. You know, again, your identity, you're super comfortable. And to consider doing something else, you know, those are new skill sets. Like, that's new muscle memory you have to develop. And I think that can be really frightening.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and so let's talk about that fear for a second, because one of the things that people say to me a lot, I mean, so people obviously listen to the podcast for this, they take the course as well, specifically, I guess, Industry Insider. One of the questions that they ask around non-clinical jobs or pharma switches, for example, is, you know, whether there are things they will regret, whether you can go back, whether you are, quote, still a doctor anymore. I mean, things that on the one hand are really startling, and then on the other hand are extremely common. And so and I'm thinking about, again, the language of like leaving, as if it's a door is closed that can never be reopened. In my view, that's not at all the reality, but we seem to paint it in this light that is not only scary, but seemingly like a decision that can't be undone. I already know what I think about this, but I'd love to know, what do you think?
Yeah, this was actually, I think, one of the key points in my decision-making process. And we can kind of go back and talk about grief, because I think I went through several stages of grief in this decision, which I think actually has been going on for about a year now, when I can really now look at what happened. But as I was seriously considering, you know, making this transition, and I had talked to some recruiters and I had some interviews set up, and I kind of reached that moment of like, oh man, like, what am I doing? And it was kind of this like freak out, you know, like, what if I'm not good at this? Like, what if I don't like it? You know, what if I fail? Mm-hmm. And I think failure is just a really powerful word in medicine, because we don't really look at failure as growth. You know, failure in medicine, I think we are taught that if you fail, maybe you don't, you know, make it into the residency you want or the fellowship you want. And then when you start practicing clinical medicine, you know, failure can be bad outcomes and death. And so mm-hmm. I think failure is just a very negative word in medicine. And I distinctly remember having a conversation with a friend, you know, who's also a coach. And she said to me, she's like, Debbie, you can't fail. And I'm like, of course I can. Let me tell you the 50 different ways I can fail. And she said, no, you have set yourself up in a way that if this is not the opportunity that you want, right, either you're not good at it, you don't like it, you know, something happens, like, you still have all this experience as a clinician and you absolutely can go back. And I would say now more than ever, you can absolutely go back. I mean, I think it depends on how long, et cetera, it is, you know, keeping up your accreditation, you know, your license, things like that. But especially in the short term, I think it would be incredibly easy to go back. And if you're leaving on good terms and you know, still taking good care of patients and things like that, I absolutely do not feel that we're closing a door. You know, I think it's a door that stays open. And I know multiple people who are doing other things who continue to do clinical medicine in some way. You know, I very much see that often there's like, I'm going to step away for a little bit and then, you know, maybe I add it back part-time or locums, or, you know, I've heard of people that really just miss it and want to come back. So I think that is very key to recognize that, no, you're not shutting a door.
Yeah, that's so true. I think that the door is open, and it's the growth edge, right? If it's not your cup of tea for whatever reason, you can go back to what you're doing before. You can go forward and do something totally different, and it's not final. It's not permanent. It's not really something that that closes a chapter either, right? And opens a different one. It's just an opportunity for growth. So why is it, do you think, that people do have so much fear? I mean, because what we've said, like, sort of, it's obvious, right? Sort of self-evident. Of course a person can go mm-hmm. back, but people don't seem to make decisions as if that's true. We do seem to be kind of rooted and held back by fear a little bit.
I think fear is huge. And, you know, my personal journey is I had to really be willing to walk with that fear to take that next step. And I think there were a couple times in my journey where I let fear stop me and turn me back and say, nope, you absolutely cannot do it. But I think it is because we've been doing this for a very long time. And like I said, it's this comfortableness, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you don't think about going in and examining a patient anymore. There's so much we've just done for so many years and we become so comfortable at it. And I think when you're going to do something different, there's going to be a learning curve. And we fail to recognize that, you know, we've got this skill set, this processing, you know, how we became at what we're good at, we absolutely can use that same skill set to become good at something else. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely stepping out of your comfort zone. And I think that's natural. You know, whenever you're doing something new, I think the brain offers up, you know, all kinds of reasons to, quote, keep you safe. I mean, I know my brain offered up a gazillion reasons as to why I should not, you know, step out of my current position, even when I felt like it was something I very much wanted to do. So I think just really realizing that fear is growth and that you're in this growth pathway and being willing to walk with it and get whatever support you need, I think is just key. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's just normal. I think fear is normal when you're doing something different or you're thinking about something different. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think fear is a sign that it's important. Right. So, I mean, I think for most of us, if we could remember back to what it felt like on the first day of medical school or the first day in a clinical rotation or the first day as an intern and then a resident and then attending, I bet there was fear for many of us at each of those stages of progression. And this is really no different. It's just, it's different, but it's not really different fundamentally. And when you, I think when you have fear, that's something to pay attention to as a sign of importance. Like, it could be a sign of a threat for sure, like, you know, fight or flight, but it's also, you know, the butterflies that you have before you make a big decision, or you buy a house, you decide to get married, you move, you know, you put in your final match list or whatever it is, and you make a big decision. I think there is that emotion that comes with a lot of that, that just says, hey, this is a big deal. It's a big deal. But maybe we misinterpret that as it's a big deal with really high stakes. That's dangerous. So don't do it, which is, I don't think that's what our voice should be telling us.
Yeah. I 100% agree with that, but I think that's what we let our voice tell us.
Yeah, totally.
You know, yeah.
So you mentioned, you mentioned identity, you mentioned fear, but you also mentioned grieving. And I don't know if we really talked about that. What do you mean by that? Is that, I'll just stop talking. You say, what do you mean by grieving?
Yeah. So for me, I think, when you think about, you know, the stages of grief, right? Like there's denial and anger and acceptance and bargaining. When I've really taken a step back, about my decision to leave clinical medicine and to do something else, I now am fully aware that the actual thought process began a year ago. And I will admit that I was in the crossroads of burnout and walking into a patient room, a very young patient with a really horrible disease. And I knew what that outcome was going to look like, having done oncology for a very long time. And, you know, I had that nauseous feeling in my stomach of like, oh, I just don't want to go in and have this conversation. But I walked in the room and there was just very much something about this patient that I was like, that could be me. That could be my best friend. Like, it just resonated so profoundly to me. And it was at that time where I was charting so too much and had really not been doing the things that I liked and taking care of myself. And I was like, what am I doing? And I did seek help for burnout. And I feel like I got over that. And I'm really glad I did, because I think if I would have just, quote, run in the midst of burnout, that wouldn't have been a good thing. And I think I would have not been happy in the next venture. But I thought about that and I was like, oh, of course not. You know, I'm a physician. And I think that's, you know, back in the times when I was talking to colleagues about what else I could do. And there was really nothing else that I thought about. And so as I recovered from burnout and, you know, started to enjoy my job more, you know, got rid of the people pleasing, had some boundaries in place, I just began to have this feeling of like something's missing. I'm meant to be doing something a little bit different. And I talked to some colleagues, you know, in pharma and doing other things. And in my academic career, I had loved research. And, you know, right now, you know, being 100% clinical, there's just not enough time to do both. And I had these conversations about what it looks like. And I was like, oh, that would be really cool. And I thought about it and they're like, oh, you should apply. And I'm like, oh, absolutely not. I'm a medical oncologist. This is what I do. Like, no way. And I think that's, again, where I was seeing the denial. Mm. And I kept, again, having that feeling of like, what's missing? You know, I couldn't say that I didn't like my job, but just something was missing. And, you know, I was like, I don't know. Do I change my schedule? Do I do some activities outside of work? And I felt like I was doing a really good time of self-care. And, you know, I wasn't overworking and I was mountain biking and doing the things that I liked. But I just wouldn't allow myself that thought that there was something else that I could do and that it would be okay to do. And so whenever I thought about pharma, I was like, absolutely not. That there's no way. I'm going to hate it. I'm going to be horrible at it. I can't do it. And so I'm going to say that was my denial phase. And when I made the decision, it was actually a moral injury, I'm going to say. And, you know, I came in and I looked at something and I was just like, oh, you know, this is so frustrating. And I say that there's almost like a switch in my brain where I'm like, I'm done, you know? Mm-hmm. And I realized that it wasn't necessarily like that event. And I say it was kind of the proverbial, you know, straw that broke the camel's back. But I think really what it was is I had grown and I had matured and I had set some boundaries up and I knew that there was this something else that I wanted to try. And so when I said I'm done, I think it was really just the point that, you know, my boundaries had been crossed and it gave me enough momentum to say, okay, I'm willing to walk with that fear. I'm willing to finally listen to that voice in my head that says, I want to do something different, you know, and I knew specifically what I wanted to do. I very much wanted to go into pharma. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, there was this anger and, you know, I fell a little bit into this victim role of like, the system has finally broken me, you know, like they finally broke me. I'm leaving clinical medicine. And then I realized like, no, like the system didn't break you, you know, like you're fine. This is not being broken. But I was very angry and then maybe that lasted for a week or so. And that would alternate with this, profound sadness that I was even considering leaving what was my dream for so long of like, mm-hmm. I've worked so hard to get here. You know, I'm in this amazing position. And like I said, it was not that I didn't like my job. Right. And I had to really think about like, am I running away or walking towards? And I'm like, I really don't think that I'm running away. You know, sure. You know, medicine is tough nowadays. You know, there's things I don't like about medicine, but yeah. I can honestly say like, that wasn't it. And so I went through that anger and that sadness, and I still, you know, have some of that, you know, when I think about now I'm telling my patients I'm leaving and I'm like, gosh, you know, I've built up this practice and I've worked really hard and I have these relationships with patients and, you know, telling them is horrible. Like it's a horrible feeling, you know, and it's almost that same feeling of like, oh my gosh, I got to go in this room and tell them. And you know, I had one patient who was just so upset and I'm like, this is so not fair to the patients. Like they've trusted me in their journey and now I'm kind of picking up and leaving. And, you know, is that fair to the patients? Is that fair to my partners? And that continues to be a little bit of a struggle where I can take a look back and say, no, you know, I'm doing the next thing. Like these are problems that are, you know, beyond me. But you know, these feelings are real and I think they're normal. Yeah. You know, I've been an oncologist for 16 years and, I think that that's going to take time. And I think there's still going to be some, you know, like, it's almost like missing, right? Like missing that, you know, that loved one or, you know, sure, you know, in medicine, I've had my good moments with medicine. I've had my bad moments with medicine, but you know, overall it's a big part of my identity and my life. Mm-hmm. And, I think I finally got to acceptance and I think I can, you know, now sit here and recognize that this is just all part of it. It's all part of the transition and, you know, it's part of, you know, kind of moving on from one chapter to the other. You know, I've jokingly said I'm retiring from clinical medicine and people will say that that's very negative. Like you're not retiring. And I'm like, well, I kind of see it that way. And I don't think it's negative, right? I think it's, mm-hmm. You know, when you say hell yes to something, you know, there's sometimes you got to say no to something else. And mm-hmm. So I really look at it as like, this is my next growth. Like this is my next, you know, chapter, but I'm always going to be a physician.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, like I said, I'm still in the midst of it and there's still some rawness, about, you know, about leaving. And I think that's normal and healthy.
Totally. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And you really are. I mean, anyone who didn't catch this in the beginning, like you're in your 90-day notice period, at the time that we're recording this, from your clinical work. So you're right in the middle of it, you know, walking into the rooms and telling the patients that you've made this change and letting your partners know. And, obviously there's going to be a lot of emotion wrapped up in that. And a lot of it is probably also just wrapped up in your own integrity and, and your desire, right, to do right by the people you work with and the patients you care for.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I think everyone can relate to that. I think the other part that's interesting in what you've described is, it sounds like there was like a personal narrative going on for you for a little while in between having a seed of curiosity planted where you thought, you know, there's something missing, something more I want to do. And then another voice in your head saying like, but you shouldn't want to do that, right? You should want to stay and do this. You should want to stay and be, you know, a clinical physician because you've worked so hard to get here, or because, you know, you've invested so much in your training, or because that's what's expected of you, right? It's expected that you become a clinician and you'll do so until you're old and gray. That's what's expected.
Yeah, I think that was very powerful. And I've left positions before, you know, and transitioned, you know, being in medicine, you know, this long, that's normal. But I can tell you that when I've told people this time, you know, hey, I'm leaving, and they say, oh, you know, where are you going? And I tell them, there's like this pregnant pause. Mm. And I'm going to say, like, it's very different than any other experience I've had. And I think that there's different, you know, who knows what other people's thoughts really are, but, you know, kind of what I'm interpreting is, I think some people surprised, like they never would expect to hear that from me. I think, you know, there's definitely some people that I know are disappointed with my decision. Mm-hmm. And I think other people kind of stop and say, well, gosh, you know, I've kind of been thinking about this. Like, you know, how did you become brave enough to actually do it? Mm-hmm. You know, what did that look like? But it's definitely something I've noticed this time is these pregnant pauses, you know, when I told people. And of course, you know, I would say the vast, vast majority of people are very supportive. But, you know, are there some, you know, people that are disappointed in my decision? Yes. And I've had to really look at that and say, well, they're not disappointed in me. They're disappointed in my decision. And I think that's, you know, going to be part of any transition.
I think that's right. I can remember quite vividly, when I took my first role in medical affairs, in the pharmaceutical industry, that my, you know, I had been in academics for a very long time and good at it, you know, and having a good amount of success. And my partners and my boss and my mentors, I think surprised, as you said, was very common. People just sort of didn't see it coming and they didn't understand. They just didn't understand. But I think as we all say in medicine that we're lifelong learners, right? And I wanted to learn something different. I wanted to just do something that was a little bit different. And I don't know, I guess because a lot of people really do actually like to be in their comfort zone, maybe learning like little new things along the way. I think it was surprising to people that I wanted to do something so different. And I do think some people were confused and some people were supportive. Mm-hmm. And I don't think actually anybody was overtly not supportive. I just don't know what their internal dialogue was, you know?
Yeah.
I think people had a different vision of what my career would look like. But it certainly didn't match up with mine. You know, people have said, oh, but you could have been chair. Well, I mean, that's not actually really anything that I had ever aspired to or would want to do. So it is interesting what other people, how people react and what they say. And I think that's something that many of our colleagues, that's probably not like that alone is maybe not the only thing holding them back, but I think it's a considerable component is what will people think or what will people say?
Yes. And I think that we have become very good people pleasers in growing up in medicine. You know, you always want to do your best and you know, you think about med school resident, like you want to be a good resident, you want to be seen as being good. And, you know, you move into your tending career, right? So I think people pleasing is natural for us. But, you know, even when you're recognizing it beyond that for what it is, I think it's just something very different. And I think one of the comments that stuck out most to me is actually my very best friend who is a physician. And she'd been kind of hearing about my last year, you know, like she's lived it with me. She's seen it. And I distinctly remember talking to her, you know, we were mountain biking and, you know, we were climbing this mountain. And I said, you know, I'm going to interview for some pharma positions. And I think that I really am going to take this next step and leave clinical medicine. And, you know, the next day we wrote to someone else and I'm like, gosh, I've been really tired. And she's like, yeah, yesterday she was talking about leaving clinical medicine. Like she must really be off. And I was like, no, like I'm not kidding. Like I'm really serious. And, you know, she was very supportive, but, you know, even after like I accepted the job and told her, like, it was like a week or two later where I get this text from her and she's like, I still cannot wrap my head around the fact that you're leaving clinical medicine. And so I think that, again, for some people, you know, once you're a physician, like, it's just not even something they can think about. And so it's not really a disappointment or anything. It's just something that can't be considered, because we're so used to being like, okay, a physician, a clinician, like, that's what they do, right? That's what they do until they retire.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting to me that is, I think, how most people think. And it's probably how I thought for a long time too. But when you take a step back, you realize that, you know, so yes, if you're at the sharp end of the stick, so to speak, right, you're in the clinic or in the operating room, in the hospital with patients, but every medicine that you use and every technology that you use, every diagnostic that you use, and, you know, the insurance that covers, and all of the different parts of the healthcare system, you know, love it or hate it in its totality, it's sort of a little bit of a monster in the United States, but everywhere that a physician or clinician in the clinical practice is interfacing, there are physicians on the other side of those things trying to help, on a macro scale, make that effective for patients, right? Bring that to its best value for patients, to make it most helpful for physicians and other clinicians. And so really, like, the possibilities are all around us, and people are already doing them. And there are doctors at the FDA and doctors in government and there's about doctors everywhere doing everything. Why do we think there's no possibilities?
Yeah, I think it's our limiting beliefs, right? It's like, we just can't see ourselves doing other things. And I've had conversation with, you know, some talented, smart colleagues, and yeah, they can't see it. They can't see that they can actually do it. And, you know, so I'm going to tell people listening to this today, like, if you're thinking about doing something, like, absolutely, there's so many things you can do. You know, I think it's important that you're looking for the right reasons and very much not a running away, but actually walking towards opportunities.
Yes.
But if you're in that mindset and truly ready, then walk with that fear and do it, because yeah, I mean, there's so many opportunities out there.
I love that. Walk with the fear. I love it. So, I mean, this is fascinating. We've really crossed the gamut from like the beginning to think about transitioning out of clinical medicine to, you know, what does that mean to you, to your identity, with the fear, the emotions that you feel, potentially the grieving process that you go through, and then what other people think and how they react to it and what you think they're going to think and how you react to that. And then this just whole world of possibilities. And you and I obviously both now have pharma careers. I do, and you will in 90 days. Mm-hmm. But there are, you know, scads of other possibilities, as I already really just mentioned. So, I wonder, maybe you can comment on, what do you think, you know, what is the feeling or the identity shift or mindset shift that goes with getting over that hump and realizing there are those possibilities out there and that you can do them?
Yeah. You know, one of the most powerful things that I actually did is I sat down with a coach who helps, you know, coach you, you know, in that transition. Because one of the things I realized I needed was a resume, and I've never had a resume a day in my life. Like, I didn't even know that those existed.
Yes.
Right? Like, I've had this CV from the time I was a medical student, right? So I was like, resume? Physicians don't do resumes. But you know, this was kind of like right when I was like, okay, I'm serious enough. Like I'm willing, like I wasn't 100% there, but I'm like, okay, I'm going to look, I'm going to see what's out there. And, you know, sitting down and really going through my CV and really going point by point and being, and appreciating like what I've done and like what skills that I actually have, I think was so powerful for me, because we just go through and we're like, yep, that's another line on the CV. Yeah, that's another line on the CV. Yeah, that's another line on the CV. Like, whatever, right? Like, it doesn't mean anything, but we have gained so many skills. But I think that it is in the mindset that you feel comfortable where you are. I think that you have to be at the point where you're following your North Star. You know, Martha Beck talks about this North Star of, you know, when something feels right, like allowing yourself to follow it. And so if you have a passion, you have a curiosity, like you really want to move forward. And again, you're walking towards something. you can kind of like listen, like tune out that other noise of like, oh my God, what is my mom going to think? Right. Or like, what's my boss going to think? What's my colleague, my best friend? Like, it doesn't matter, because then you're in a spot where you're like, okay, this is for me and this is what I want to do. And I've got to realize that I'm going to be uncomfortable sometimes, and that these are very much new opportunities, and you do it, like you commit to doing it. And then you recognize that you're going to be like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? And it's a different process, right? Like, you know, the interview process is different, you know, yeah. the recruitment, you know, how you hear back, like the, everything is completely different. And so I think at each step you have to say like, this is an adventure. Like this is what I want to do, and I'm going to keep following it. And yeah, kind of, this is scary and I'm uncomfortable. But I'm just going to keep doing it because this is where I want to go. As far as like what opportunities are out there, I think just networking and talking to other people. Mm-hmm. I think listening, you know, to your podcast, you know, there's a couple other where, you know, people are interviewed doing different things, and just kind of educating yourself, you know, what else is out there. You know, I think again, you know, coaching can be important, where you really sit down with someone and kind of talk about like what you like and what you don't and what possibilities are out there. Yeah. But it's amazing that we're such, you know, smart, sophisticated people, and that we really, if we think about doing something besides clinical medicine, like we can't even think about like two other things that we could do. And the reality yeah. is, you know, there's so many. So,
or, you know, it's remarkable because I mean, as you have probably seen, no doubt, right? There is a fire burning through medicine of side gigs, right? So it seems mm-hmm. like physicians can think of plenty to do as like a side job, but they can't really seem to think of what to do as a, you know, full-time career focus. But one of the things I think is a very fun challenge, so for anybody listening, go do this. You get on LinkedIn and you have it connected to your medical school or your university, your contacts, right? So that your school, if you put in a couple of those basics, you know, it will know where you went to school and when, if you tell it. And if you go and look up the alumni, like the classmates that you're no longer in touch with, you have no idea what they're doing, scan that list. Somebody is doing something other than taking care of patients in the clinic. And they're probably doing something that sounds really, really cool. And you can too, I would say to anybody who's listening, if you want. And by all means, if you love it in the OR, the clinic, the hospital, please stay there and be an amazing physician, because we need that. We need it all around at every table.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Huh. I think the key is do what makes you happy. Like, do what makes you passionate.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's really simple, but I'm going to just dwell on it for a second. I think what's really profound about that is that you're talking about what you want to do. Right. And medicine is very altruistic. It's really it's a career that's just filled with sacrifice and putting others first, which is obviously very important, right? We have to take excellent care of our patients. But I think it is also fair that you love what you're doing and that it continues to grow you and stretch you in the way that you want. And again, not everybody wants it in the same way. So that's fine. When you think about, you absolutely deserve to do something that you love. So your career is not just about like who will hire me and what can I do, but also like, what do I want to do? Because you can do it. So pick something you want to do. And it can be more than one thing over your lifetime. So Debbie, before we hang up, I wanted just to give a second, because not only do you have a wealth of personal life experience and you're going through some things right now, so you're on a growth edge now too, but you are also an executive coach. Can you take a couple of minutes to tell the audience about what kind of coaching you offer and maybe where they can find you?
Sure. So I am a certified executive coach. I coach physicians, and my niche is working with people who are in transition, either within or out of clinical medicine. I also have a passion on working with patients and patients. I always say that it's the natural, right? Working with clients, other physicians on preventing and recovering from burnout. And, you know, the third area that I really like is working on identity, to identify as more than just a physician. So, you know, feel free to check out my website. It's www.debbiebradleymd.com. And, you know, follow your passion. I like to say there's one life, there's one you.
I love it. thank you so much. I know this episode is going to be really valuable for a lot of people thinking, and a lot of people who've been thinking and processing the same things that you've been talking about. What does it mean to leave clinical medicine? What will it mean for them? And is it a permanent meaning? I think that's one of the big things. Thanks, Debbie, so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Before you go, please review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. Your support makes all the difference, and it truly helps this information reach someone just like you who may really need it. Until next time, thanks for listening.